Welcome to the Cyber Matters Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the Cyber Guild. Our mission is to bring diversity to all levels of cybersecurity in the greater Washington area by unifying allies across the private and public sector, ensuring opportunities are as universal as talent, and continually transforming the industry.
Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Matters Podcast. I'm Jamil Evans. I'm your host and also a board member at the Cyber Guild. Today, I'm excited to have two guests to talk about cyber with a focus on how business owners can grow a strong business, raise capital, and eventually go to market for potential merger and acquisition. Today, my guests are Warren Romine, a widely respected dealmaker with an expertise in M&A and capital raising, and Jim Shea, a serial entrepreneur and CEO of DeepSig. So to get started, Warren, I'll start with you. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell us about where you're from and how did you get to where you are today?
Thank you, Jamil. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me. So I am Warren Romine, founder and managing director of Orchardknob Capital. Orchardknob Capital is a mergers and acquisition advisory firm that also provides some merchant banking services. So my background, I've been in investment banking, mergers and acquisition advisory for the last 30 years by way of Chattanooga and Morehouse College. I spent the first part of my career in New York, then attended Harvard Business School, was recruited to go back, did it for a few more years, and then decided about 22 years ago to move to Washington, D.C. and start focusing on aerospace, defense, and government services companies. So over the years, done scores of transactions across the middle market space, 20 million to half a billion dollars.
That's a lot of great experience. I know our listeners would love to know more about, so I'll definitely be asking you some questions on that. But Jim, over to you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I was grew up in Buffalo, New York, but that was a little too cold for me. So I went to Georgia Tech for my undergraduate. And then went to University of Illinois, cold again, to finish up my education, and then moved with my wife to the D.C. area over 30 years ago. First, I worked for the government for a couple of years, but then did my first startup in 1990. It was a company, similar to what we're doing with DeepSig. We started out in the defense space, doing satellite software radios, defined radios, but then rotated in the cable modem test space and actually developed the test solution for cable modems. Sold that company in 2000. With the acquiring company, I started doing work in with 3G at the time, having design teams in the US and the UK, and actually did high volume manufacturing in China. And then after that, helped a VC do a turnaround of a company that we were able to sell to RIM. And then after that, actually went to England for 2 years while my wife worked at the US Embassy, had a great time, but it's time to get back to reality. I came back and actually did a turnaround of DRS Signal Solutions, a company based in Germantown, Maryland, and did that for a number of years, but wanted to do another startup and then got engaged with my co-founder, Dr. Tim O'Shea. So the names are similar, causes some confusion, but I'm now the finance guy behind it. I've left engineering long ago, but we formed the company, raised some money, and DeepSig is applying AI to wireless problems, and particularly to 5G, and we're getting ready to raise our Series B. So it's been great, and I've enjoyed that.
Excellent. Thank you. Appreciate it. So Jim, staying with you, can you tell us a little bit more about DeepSig and what does DeepSig do? What's your mission over there?
Sure. Well, DeepSig was the core technology was developed by my co-founder, Dr. Tim O'Shea at Virginia Tech. And Tim realized about 2014, all this great deep learning that was revolutionizing image detection. And we went from recognizing images with 85% accuracy to about 99% now. It could be applied to the wireless environment. Mm. So what we did is I was ready to leave DRS, great company, but I was ready to do another startup. And we went in and we licensed all the technology developed at Virginia Tech for equity. So Virginia Tech does have equity in the company. And we have two products. We have our first product is called OmniSig. It detects and classifies signals very rapidly in the wireless environment. And we're finding a lot of use for this in the defense space where we want to detect threatening signals, but also in the commercial space where it's being used to look for interference and then particularly on the cyber side, exfiltration of data from various facilities. And we actually have it on trial now at one of the major web service providers looking for exfiltration data as a threatening thing. The converse to that is we've actually developed a product that actually can use AI to make communication better. And we're applying that to 5G. And we actually have an operating 5G base station in Arlington, Virginia. We're partnered with Intel. Intel is helping to transform the way we do 5G through virtualization. And by adding AI, we get a higher quality of service, so fewer drop calls, higher data rates, and we use less power, making it a much greener solution. And as you may know, one of the problems with 5G, it takes a lot of power. So we're really trying to reduce that power consumption and make it a more environmentally friendly technology.
That's awesome. That's really awesome that you're working in the 5G space and helping to make it sounds like a little more reliable and a little more secure. Can you tell me though, and a lot of listeners may have this question as well, but is 5G, when it's an AI native call, is that more secure than 5G without the AI built in?
No, for 5G, not particularly. We're really focused. We have to stay at the standards. So when we go with AI native, as we call it, we basically replace a lot of the signal processing algorithms that are 10, 20, maybe even 30 or 40 years old with AI. And by doing that, we just process the signals far more efficiently. Now, eventually we'll go to 6G. And in 6G, we're going to move away from the standard waveforms and actually use AI to learn a waveform. And we believe that will add a layer of security because your phone and your base station will actually be communicating and developing on waveform dynamically that will give the best performance. And it would be very difficult to intercept that if you weren't in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. So Warren, over to you. I want to ask you a little bit about cyber and the market. How valuable is cyber in the market today? What kind of multiples are companies demanding out there or getting out there, I should say?
Yeah, good question, Jamil. I mean, right now, cybersecurity is red hot. As we can see with everything that's happening on the news from the Colonial Pipeline to the Ukrainian, or I should say Russian, war in Ukraine, is causing it to really become and maintain and remain topic du jour for everyone regarding cyber and what the possibilities and capabilities are. And when you look at the M&A market, it's red hot because everyone knows it's a growing segment. It's growing pretty significantly, several billion dollars at double digit rates of growth. And so the expectation is that buying into cyber is buying into a high growth area. And we've seen some major deals happen over the last several months. Obviously, Google acquired Mandiant, and then the PE consortium buying McAfee back in November. These are multi-billion dollar transactions, and one's more consumer focused and the other's corporate focus with originally coming out of government. So I think all sectors of cyber are pretty attractive right now.
That makes sense. And Jim, I want to give you a chance to respond to that too from your perspective. I know you mentioned that there is a cyber component to your mission at DeepSig, but what is your perspective of the market today and the value of cyber?
Yeah, we think cyber and AI are both probably the two hottest markets out there. We always look for what as a company, we kind of want to have what our exit strategy would be. And, we see if you're a cyber company and your services, you might get maybe 1 to 2 times your revenue. But if you have products in the defense space, it's probably 4x. But in the commercial space, we're seeing exits of 10 to 15 and even above that in your revenue, not even making a profit, just the revenue. Mm. So we think it's kind of a golden area. And I think, particularly in cyber, we're seeing the effects of all theft that has occurred, and companies need to protect themselves. So, I think the growth potential is just phenomenal for this market. Year on year, I think you're going to see phenomenal increases in the market size and opportunities.
Well, I know that's great news for our listeners to this podcast. So Warren, again, for our owners, our listeners who own or business owners running businesses out there, making great products, but not really sure quite how to go after some investment capital, how to really go to market. Can you just give a high level view of what the process is to get started? What's the first thing you need to do to get started? And what is that process like?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing obviously is have your business plan and strategy in order and aligned. So you can communicate to prospective investors what it is that you want to accomplish and the reason why you want to use their capital. And that goes across all cycles of business, right? From the early stage to the mature businesses, what is it you want to accomplish? And the business plan and strategy is critical. And then if you're an early stage or a relatively emerging company, right? The focus is probably on using that capital for growth and making sure investors understand which areas you're going to invest in and drive the growth and drive, you know, that growth rate to a point where obviously you'll create some real value. And that may be software, but it could also be services depending on what you're doing. I mean, we've seen high growth companies across the board when it comes to cyber, Mandiant being a good example of that with respect to the latter. And then, you know, as you're maturing, right, you may become a very profitable business, but still want to add capital to grow. You know, and there's different segments, quite honestly. There's groups that want to invest in companies that need to build out a sales team. And they have what they call venture debt for those types of businesses where it's relatively quick, relatively short turnaround, you know, 18 months, 2 years. And then you kind of mature into the next phase. And at some point, right, we like to see owners, operators, investors also look for liquidity. And they're looking for, at that point, either a new buyer to take them out or a private equity group to provide some liquidity and some investment. But there's a whole array of different things that you might want to consider as you're trying to raise capital. But it really starts with that business plan, strategy, to the extent that you have the customers, the employees, the contracts or subscriptions. Those are the things that are going to drive value for your business overall.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. And Jim, from your perspective, I know you're not new to raising capital and taking companies to market. What are your perspectives on that process? What can you advise startup founders out there on this process?
Well, I think, you know, Warren made a lot of great points, but I think it's real critical, you know, as he said, you really have to understand, I think, where your place is in the market. Are you a service company majority, or are you a product company where you fit in, and have a real clear vision for what you're going to do with the money when it comes in. And you use the money for different things at different times. We raised a seed round, and, you know, we started out with four employees. So we just were trying to survive, and we brought kind of first couple of contracts, and we had some product development ideas. Then we did the Series A, and that really helped get us into the 5G market. Now for the Series B, just like, you know, Warren was alluding to, we're going to grow our sales staff. We're spending the money to do a lot of demonstrations for customers throughout the world. And I think we have a real good path for why putting this money in the company accelerates our growth. You just can't need the money just to survive. It has to be, I'm a good company. If I stopped right now, I could make a profit if I chose to, but instead we want to grow at 100%+ a year in revenue. And to do this, we bring investor money in, and investors can see that compounding growth and how it gives value to them. And they can see a solid exit in the not too distant future. So those are the kind of strategies and I think concepts you should have as you go to the market for raising money.
And how important would you guys say it is to have a good story? I mean, it's from what I understand, like you said, they're not just looking to invest in the company to save it. It's really about where the company's going. So how important is a story to a potential investor out there?
I think the story and the people are critical, right? It's not just the story, but it's the people and it's the messages they buy into and believe in. And they're the ones who are going to execute and communicate it to the marketplace. First to investors to raise the additional capital, but then more broadly to the marketplace so that you're capturing more customers and more revenue. So the story is always critical, but it comes down to the people. People want to invest with people, right? They, even if they meet them during a process, they want to know that that person or group of people will drive their business forward and safeguard their investment so they can get a return on it.
Good point.
Yeah, I'll just add to that. I think the people are critical. I mean, investors, especially as you get larger, they want to see you have some depth on your bench. You're not relying just on one person. We tried to do that at DeepSig. We have some phenomenal, people, but we have depth in that. So if something would happen, the company doesn't go away with one individual. I think also the vision, the story and the vision. I mean, you know, when we're pitching this, our goal is to get to $100 million ARR. And we think, you know, based upon the numbers, that with a product software company, we can get a 10 to 15x multiple. So that gives us a $1 billion plus exit. And that's what we are really focused on. And I think, you know, you have to believe it. You have to have the story that fits together, and you have to have data that backs up the story. You know, understanding of the market, demonstrating what you're doing, meaning you can understand what the total available market for what you're going for, and then you can be a player that may get to 20 to 30% of that total available market and be a significant player. Because, you know, I think a mistake early entrepreneurs can do, they say, I got this huge $100 billion market. All I need to get is 1% of that. Well, my experience in markets is you probably get 20% or zero. You know, there's not a lot in between there. You're either going to be a significant player, and you can have competition, of course, but you've got to have the plan to become a significant player in whatever market that you want to, you know, enter into and become a player in.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I'm taking away from what both of you guys have said is it's, you know, it's great to have a good product and to have a great technology, but there's a lot more that needs to be considered here, and that team is really important. And your vision is really important as well. So that's really good insights. So Larry Fink, CEO of BlackRock, made some news, and I find it interesting because he did single out social responsibility as a driver for value, business value. You know, when you look at those multiples that might be out there, social responsibility as being a big part of that, which makes me think about culture. And it actually elevates that into the realm of, okay, this can actually be a discriminator for you, or at least can set you apart in the market. What do you guys think about that? I mean, where is social responsibility on your radar in terms of the value that you put into DeepSig? Let's start with you, Jim.
Yeah.
Is that something you believe in as well?
I think so. I you know, I haven't heard any investors for what we're doing that say, you know, by being more socially responsible, except on the environmental side, particularly. I mean, that is very, very important. In fact, we were just at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, and we had European operators that came by and said, you know, reducing power consumption and being a greener technology is almost more important than the performance improvements you can get. But I really see, as you expand it beyond just the environmental side, I see social responsibility as you said, Jamal, contributing to your company corporate culture. Mm-hmm. Culture is important. I mean, you want to attract the very best. You know, you're a startup, you know, you can't necessarily pay people the highest amounts that they can get in other places. We stock, I mean, we're very big into stock options, but you want people to want to come to work at the company and feel that you're a force for good. So I think for that, social responsibility is very important to embrace and understand.
I like that. Warren, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with Jim. Obviously, social responsibility is, you know, very important, critical, and it's good to see that that's becoming, you know, gaining favor again, right? With, you know, thinking about all the stakeholders and not just the shareholders, but the element that we see it a lot in our business is when you're looking at some of these defense companies, right? There, we may, the universe of buyers or universe of investors may be a bit more narrow, depending on what type of products they're delivering. You know, you don't have any issues with a lot of IT solutions, but when you're thinking about some of the offensive weaponry, right, that buyer universe or investor universe narrows just because, you know, that concern about being socially conscious and responsible and what type of products are you putting out there in the marketplace and what are they used for?
Awesome. Okay. So last question for both of you. Warren, we'll start with you this time. If you could just pick one hot tip for our listeners out there, you know, looking to grow these businesses and take them to market, what would that one tip be, you know, from your perspective?
One tip, listen to your customers. I would say that's what I've heard from most of the owners and entrepreneurs I've talked to over the years is, you know, we've identified a customer, sometimes put them in business. And as that customer's need or mission changes or evolves, their businesses evolved. They usually grew with them because they were meeting the customer's needs. So I would say, listen to the customers.
Oh, that's one I can identify with. I like that. Jim, how about you?
That's a tough one because, you know, Warren took the obvious answer, but I think it's critical because, you know, listen to your customer and, you know, and the customer should really come first. I mean, your goal is to find customers that can be your partners. because you want to make them successful. And if you make them successful, they're going to make you successful. So I think that's very important. And I think the other thing is, you know, have a personal mission for what you're trying to accomplish with the company. I mean, you know, change the world some way. It's always been, obviously, you know, we want to be very successful, but it's personally what I like to do. I like to, you know, bring people with me and form this team and make everyone successful. And I love seeing, you know, after you sell a company and you see these people that you've helped make a lot of money for go out and buy houses and do other things that they probably couldn't have done otherwise. That could be very rewarding. So have a personal mission, what you want to accomplish.
Well, that's a great way to close it out. Thank you to you, Jim and Warren, both for joining me today on Cyber Matters. Thought it was a really great conversation, and just want to say thank you again.
Thanks so much. Really enjoyed this.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure. Look forward to doing it again sometime.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cyber Matters brought to you by the Cyber Guild. You can find us at www.thecyberguild.org. If you liked this episode, please download and subscribe to this podcast and check back for more episodes featuring employers, economic development agencies, policymakers, leaders, and professionals in the cybersecurity industry.